Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And here we are again on this Monday to start your week out with the three martinis for you today. Usually we are bringing you the good, the bad, and the crazy martini, but we're going to mix it up a little bit for you because it is Monday. I am Rich McFadden from the Radio America Network, along with Jim Garrity from National Review Online. And today, Jim, we're going to start things out with a bad martini, just because over in the UK they've had another attack, and this one seems like it's just kind of piling on with the amount of attacks we've had this year.
It does. And just as you feel like, you know, our friends across the pond have suffered enough, can it get any worse? Well, it's worse. I can think back to the pedestrians on Westminster Bridge a couple months ago. Then you had the bombing at the concert in Manchester, the van and the stabbing attacks near London Bridge about a week ago or so. The Grenfell Tower public housing project, which was not necessarily deliberate terrorism, but undoubtedly was a terrible death toll associated with that, and appears to be becoming a national controversy. But then late last night, early this morning, there was another act of brutal violence, this time committed by a perpetrator who allegedly is said to have screamed, "I'm going to kill all Muslims." The driver of this van who ran down a bunch of people, one person died, 10 other injured. Described as a large white man, and who basically was saying things like, "I said I did the job, I've done my bit, I'd do it again, I'd do it again." Everyone who was injured were Muslims, and they were coming out of the mosque after Ramadan night prayers. This, Gritch, is kind of one of the scenarios a lot of us have worried about. This fear that as terrorism gets worse and worse, angry people will just lash out at whatever Muslim they can find, even though a bunch of old people coming out of a mosque are not connected to terrorism, are not extremists, and there's no reason to think of them as any particular threat. This guy, I'm sure in his own mind, thinks he's a hero, even though he's literally emulating the tactics of the people he says he opposes.
Yeah, and here's a witness who came out of the mosque describing the scene.
In the mosque, I'm the imam of the mosque. I had just finished leading prayer, and around 5 minutes after we finished prayers, a brother came in quite panicked and said that somebody had run over a group of people and tried to kill them. So we rushed out, and we found around 15, 20 people on the scene tending to the injured and, like I said, administering CPR on the brother who's now deceased and the three people restraining the assailant.
And Jim, I think you kind of hit it right on the head. When people start attacking people from any group just because they think that they are the same as someone who's crazy from their group is when we've lost control.
It is. And while you can't begrudge someone feeling enraged about terrorism, about feeling powerless, about feeling frustrated, sorry, all these emotions, you know, it's up on you as a human being to do something useful and constructive and helpful with that, not to make things worse. I guess maybe you could say that's the theme of today's Three Martini Lunch. People who are making things worse instead of making things better. This guy, you know, there are a lot of times where a lot of us on the right have felt like the fears about a backlash against Muslims or unfair targeting of Muslims has been overstated. But in this case, there's no two ways around it. This guy apparently seemed to think that just by running people down on the sidewalk, he was going to make the world a better place. And this is twisted. This is evil. There is nothing that conceivably justifies it. And if this guy was a ticking time bomb, it was, you know, could be driven to this point, you have to, with a shudder, wonder how many more people in the UK or, God forbid, here in the United States could be having the same kind of hearing the sirens call to embracing extremism in the name of fighting extremism.
Right. All right, so there's your bad martini of the day. Let's move along to our first crazy martini of the day. And gerrymandering and redistricting is getting a little bit of the microscope put on it this week.
Yeah, this was we wrote about this in the Jolt a little while ago. People wondered if the Supreme Court was going to take up this case. It involves district lines drawn in Wisconsin. And there's an argument being made that, well, they were drawn unconstitutionally to benefit Republicans, but there's just too much partisanship in drawing this map. Now, the odd thing is you may be noticing, wait, this has been going on for years and years, pretty much since the founding of the Republic. It's one of the reasons you want to win the majority, is that you get to have a say in how you draw the district lines. And this is, you obviously you try to put as many, you try to build safe seats for your party. And if you can, you know, squeeze everybody who tends to vote for the other party into one district, you go and you do that. And that's one of the reasons Republicans have the House majority. It's not the main reason, but, you know, if you have a bunch of Democrats who all live densely together in one urban district, well, then it makes it very easy to draw a district line around one urban area. And then you have lots of Republicans living in the suburbs and the exurbs, and you draw the lines there to maximize that. Now, you can argue this is unfair. You can argue this isn't nice. We should have nonpartisan line drawing and things like that. Some states have it. Some states are a little more creative, shall we say, with their district lines. Rich, I went back and I looked up. Back when he was a state legislator, the Illinois Democrats had this fantastic mapping software. Right. They went down to the precinct level, and basically they could say, all right, welcome to the state legislature. We're going to redraw the district lines after the next census. Why don't you take a look and draw your perfect district? And then you do it. And Barack Obama went and did this. And this is how it operated for a really long time. Now, again, we can argue about whether it's good or whether it's bad, but it's been going on for a really long time. You could argue this is a rather grim or twisted American tradition, or you could just say, look, turnabout is fair play. This is one of the reasons you want to get your people out to vote. And let's also point out, redistricting can have a big effect, but you know what happens over a 10-year span, Rich?
What?
People move. Right? You know, the dynamics and characteristics, demographics of a particular neighborhood or community or region change. And all of a sudden you find out districts that started out the decade very uncompetitive get a little more competitive. And ones that were supposed to be competitive get less competitive. People vote with their feet. So the idea, look, you don't have to like it. I'm just saying I don't see how this violates the Constitution. So I'll see how this shakes out. Supreme Court, you know, we now have a full nine. Maybe they'll agree with me, but I just kind of find it very strange that now it feels like unconstitutional is turning into a synonym for bad.
Well, and when the Supreme Court looks at it, they will decide whether it's unconstitutional or not. And now that we have nine, do you really think it could go anywhere?
Your thinking would be no. And let's point out
that's what I'm thinking.
The Supreme Court has intervened when it seemed like redistricting was attempts to marginalize minority votes. Now, one of the great ironies was that for a good portion of the 80s and 90s, and I guess even into the most recent decade, there were two groups that really loved drawing district lines to create what they call majority-minority districts. Usually this was in the South, and it usually was trying to put together as many African-American communities, neighborhoods, and precincts into one spot. So they were very likely to elect a African-American member of Congress or African-American state legislator. And in many cases, those were Democrats. And you know, there were two people who loved this, white Republicans and black Democrats. Because hey, wait a minute. We have a district where we're likely to win and we're likely to win over and over and over again. And Republicans are like, well, heck, we'll give you that one. That's no problem. Heck, you guys have that district.
Right.
We're going to take these other three or four and they're going to be majority white. And they're more likely to elect Republicans and we'll have a majority in the state. And you could argue about whether this was the ideal system, but it just seems suspicious to me that now that Republicans have a majority, now it's not merely something that the losing party grumbles about. Now it's violating the Constitution.
Exactly.
And we'll see how this shakes
out. Exactly. It's always the party on the bottom that's going to whine the most about this. And that kind of leads us into our second crazy martini of the day. And if you listen to Eric Erickson, he's saying we all should just secede anyway. Why even bother with redistricting and let's just go back to the way it was before and let's all have our own state and run it the way we want.
Let's redistrict the country. I guess
exactly.
You know, it's from an essay he has over his site, The Resurgent. There are days I agree with Eric Erickson. There are days I disagree with him. A lot of what he's lamenting in this piece, I'd say, Eric, I'm feeling you. But then he goes off on he goes a lot further than I think most Americans would say. He says, on college campuses, conservatives are chased away by mobs and the left excuses it. Now, obviously, not every campus is Middlebury or Berkeley, but right. It has happened and we have seen excuse making. After all, they say the right deserved it. Well, not everybody on the left says that. Okay. Steve Scalise deserved it. Rich, right. I have not heard that many liberals saying, yes, Steve Scalise deserved it. And anybody who does usually gets shouted down. He goes on, there's only a one-way street and the crowd that demands tolerance only wants tolerance for themselves. All others must be silenced. You know what? There are a lot of conservatives who would agree with this. And then Rich, he goes, the political left is becoming the American ISIS. Now, look, I got a lot of beefs with liberals. I got a lot of gripes with them. I got a lot, of, you know, but you know what? They haven't, as far as I can tell, cut anybody's head off or thrown gays off buildings or set people on fire or blown up planes. You know, like, you know, I really can't stand the Alexandria shooter, but you can't say that everybody to the left of you is as bad as that guy. And for a guy who's lamenting how divided a country we're getting, I tweeted this out to Eric earlier. I think it's pouring gasoline on the fire.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. And I would say that we look at the 1% of crazy people in this country or even in the world, and we, with articles like this, you make it a bigger problem than it actually is. Yeah, do we have people that are on the left and the right that are crazy and that get a lot of attention? Yes, absolutely. But does it mean that the guy that you're sitting next to at the bar or at the restaurant who didn't vote the way that you did is going to go out and mow people down or want to secede? No, it doesn't. So it's, you know, everything has to be taken into perspective.
Yeah, it takes a frustrating situation and seems to make it worse. And I'm
struck, which the shooting was. That was a very frustrating situation last week.
Yeah. I was thinking back to the late Andrew Breitbart, who I think was a genius in many, many ways, and he's deeply missed. But he had one habit that I think has either run its course or maybe starting to have a bad effect. He, you know, people used to tweet really horrible things at him and purely hateful stuff, and he would retweet them out to all of his followers. And if I remember correctly, Andrew Breitbart would say, look, I'm doing this to illustrate that the left is not tolerant. The left is not nice. The left is not respectful and even-handed and all these good things that they think of themselves as. The left is hateful and nasty and obnoxious and profane. And I suppose there was a point to this for a while. Rich, I don't know about you. Do you ever run into anybody who thinks that liberals are just inherently nicer and better and polite? And you know, maybe it's the circles I'm traveling in, but
right.
I think that's been dispelled. I think people don't necessarily buy into that anymore. And so, but obviously lots of people emulated Breitbart and had this habit of every time somebody would get tweeted, F you bleeping, bleepy, bleep, bleep, bleep. They would retweet this out to everybody. So you got the perception that the world is full of people who are constantly saying nasty, snotty, the worst possible things.
Exactly.
And I don't think it's that common. Now, some of this also is the fact that political Twitter is not reality. It's not even reality politics. It's, you know, it's the Wild West where everybody's been given an audience and anonymity, and thus they feel free to say things like, we're going to put you in the ovens and stuff like that.
And that's the thing is, you know, you put a coward behind a keyboard, and all of a sudden they've got a big chest and big arms and they can throw anything they want out there. But if they were to sit there and talk to you mano a mano, it'd be a whole different person. And that's what we've lost. And it's a little scary there.
Yeah. So again, you know, look, I'm not saying internet trolls aren't horrible, horrible people who should all die in a fire. No. Remember this began with me denouncing extremism?
Yes.
Undoubtedly, they can get under our skin and really, you know, hurt our feelings and really bother us and really stick in our craw. But ultimately, that ninny on the internet who's tweeting at you doesn't represent all of the opposition. And it is good to remember that there are people on the other side of the aisle, people on the other side of the ideological divide who, you know, look, maybe they seem nutty to you, but there's some part of them that's nice. You don't have to be consumed by hatred towards them 24/7. And once you start comparing them to ISIS, look, they could be really, really bad. They're not ISIS. And I don't think that that helps any of these things.
You know how to really make them mad? Ignore them. That will crank them up to no end, and then eventually they will go away. So,
yeah. So again, I'm hoping, you know, Eric Erickson switches to decaf, takes a couple deep breaths, and picks up yoga, calm down a little bit, and hopefully the week will progress in improvement from here.
Namaste, brother, right?
Yeah.
All right. Well, there's your three martinis for the tomorrow. We hope to return to good, bad, and crazy. But today we had our bad, crazy, and crazy, and that's par for the course on a Monday. So until next time, I am Rich McFadden from the Radio America Network, along with Jim Garrity from National Review Online, and have a better Monday.